This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
They recounted how they had to run from the brutal violence that erupted without warning on the 15th of April. Their lives upended as suddenly as were those of the Ukrainians the year before.
That's United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi on meeting refugees fleeing the devastation in Sudan. Details coming up also. Israel launches rockets as part of its retaliation for Hamas's surprise attack Saturday. And Liberians vote for president and legislators tomorrow. These stories and more on African News Tonight. First, our top story. More than 2 days after Hamas launched its unprecedented incursion out of Gaza, Israel says it is launching scores of airstrikes against Hamas fighters, and the death toll on both sides is rising fast. Our VOA reporter, Linda Grantstein, is standing by in Tel Aviv. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Linda.
Thank you very much.
So what is the latest from where you are?
Well, the latest is that Israel has launched a really all-out assault on the Gaza Strip with dozens of airstrikes. Hamas continued to fire rockets, and in fact, the rockets hit Jerusalem, where a woman was critically wounded. Jerusalem's about 75 kilometers from Gaza, and there are reports that there are still clashes between Israeli soldiers and Hamas terrorists on the border. However, Israel says it is now in control of the 22 communities that Hamas gunmen managed to take over or partly take over on Saturday. And the death toll on both sides continues to rise. In Israel, there's a lot of sadness because they have discovered about 250 bodies of mostly young people in their 20s who were murdered at a music rave kind of party in the forest near Gaza. And about 130 Israelis have been taken into captivity in Gaza. Israeli officials say this is going to be a long, protracted war.
And an Israeli military spokesperson says the army has called up around 100,000 reservists. So is that an all-out war going on there?
Well, not yet, but well, it certainly was a war in the areas near Gaza over the past couple of days, and of course, you know, there have been more than 4,000 missiles and rockets fired. Israelis, you know, in Gaza near the border, have only seconds to run to a safe room. In Jerusalem, where I am, actually, you have a minute and a half. So today, there were two or three missile rocket alerts where we had to go into our safe room. The reservists are apparently preparing for a ground invasion of Gaza, which is a very complicated situation because Gaza is very densely populated, 2.2 million people, and Israel has tried in the past 20 years or so not to have ground invasions into Gaza. But Israeli officials are saying that this current situation where, you know, Hamas, hundreds of Hamas gunmen managed to cross Israel, taking people hostage, murdering people, it's simply unacceptable. And I think Israel has pretty much made a decision to wipe out Hamas.
Yes, but Linda, what I'm trying to ask is, this invasion, does it show a colossal Israeli intelligence failure? How did it first happen?
Yes. It's actually very hard to understand how this happened. It's 50 years since the Yom Kippur War, which until now was considered the biggest intelligence failure in Israel's history, almost to the day. In fact, it's 50 years. And it's really hard to understand. Apparently, Hamas trained for this operation for over a year. There are reports in Israel that it was coordinated or helped by Iran, and it remains very hard to understand, but apparently Israel believed that a bigger threat would come from the West Bank rather than from Gaza. They didn't understand how organized and how strong Hamas was, but it's certainly a colossal intelligence failure.
And is there any outside help Hamas got for its invasion?
Well, it's not clear if it got direct help from Iran or not, but it's certainly Hamas is funded by Iran, and it makes sense that, at least some of the training and some of the guns would come from Iran, but I think we just don't know that yet.
Linda Grantstein from Tel Aviv, thank you for your input.
Thank you.
The South African government says it is not surprised by the scale of the conflicts that erupted in Israel and Gaza. Palestinian militants from Hamas organization entered Israel on Saturday, as we reported, killing and abducting hundreds of citizens and soldiers. Israel has responded by declaring war on Hamas and has retaliated with deadly airstrikes on what it calls terrorist targets in Gaza. Hundreds of people have died on both sides of the border. Darren Taylor reports.
South Africa's diplomatic relations with Israel are strained because the African National Congress government calls it an apartheid state. The ANC says Tel Aviv treats Palestinians the way the apartheid government oppressed black South Africans, segregating and impoverishing them based on the Palestinians' ethnicity. Pretoria accuses Israel of illegally occupying parts of the West Bank, the larger of the two Palestinian territories. The other is the Gaza Strip, one of the world's most densely populated and poorest regions. South Africa provides both material and public support to what the ANC calls Palestine's Liberation Cause. Pretoria has an embassy in Tel Aviv and a well-staffed office in Ramallah on the West Bank. Director General of South Africa's Department of International Relations, Zane Dangor, tells VOA his representatives in Ramallah reported frustration among Palestinians leading up to Saturday's attacks by Hamas.
The breaches of international law by the Israeli government has escalated to the extent that many of us were not surprised by the events. It's regrettable. We think that nobody benefits from an escalation of violence and conflict. But we did see this coming given this number of killings of civilians over the last 12 months or so. South Africa's position is always that war is never an option. War is never wise. But we also believe that once the use of force is engaged in by any of these forces, whether it's the occupying forces or even those fighting what can be called wars of resistance, that the Geneva Conventions must be respected. All of them must ensure that civilians and non-combatants are not attacked.
After a vote in Parliament earlier this year, South Africa downgraded the status of its embassy and diplomatic mission in Tel Aviv. South Africa's large Jewish community, like others around the world, has reacted with outrage to the Hamas attack. Howard Saxteen, editor of the South African Jewish Report, spoke to VOA.
This will result in putting back the peace process a generation, maybe two generations. 700 Jews are dead in a single day. And there is no calling at this point in time for ceasefires or moving on. The people of Israel have been massacred.
Dangor, an international law expert, says his government is available to be part of any process aimed at securing an immediate ceasefire between Israeli and Palestinian forces.
We've been engaging with the Palestinian Authority, not with anybody else at this stage, but we are open to engaging with any of the players so that we can actually assist in whatever way we can towards a just and lasting peace and the negotiations that need to precede that.
Dangor says the United Nations must be at the center of efforts to secure this just and lasting peace. But the South African government position is that this is only possible if Israel withdraws its forces from Palestinian territory and stops allowing Jewish settlements on the West Bank. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The Israeli Defense Minister has ordered a complete siege of the Gaza Strip and a cutoff of water supplies, food and electricity 2 days after Hamas militants attacked Israel. As reported, hundreds of civilians have been killed in Israel and Gaza after Israel retaliated by launching several airstrikes on Gaza. The United States Council of Muslim Organizations, of which the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, is a member, reaffirmed its unwavering support for the Palestinian people on its website Saturday. CAIR is calling for the immediate end to atrocities in the occupied territories. Robert Macau, Government Affairs Director of CAIR, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that is the only way the violence will end.
Well, all reasonable people do want this violence to stop, and every human life has value, whether it's Palestinian or Israeli. But the only way to permanently stop this violence is to end the occupation, because I believe, similar to Ukraine, Americans and the international community would like to side with the oppressed, not the oppressor. The international community's refusal to hold the radical far-right Israeli apartheid government accountable for its escalating human rights abuses and theft of Palestinian land has only emboldened more abuses and, you know, led to this violence. It had not happened in a vacuum, but had been led up to this point.
Well, as you point out, Palestinian-Israeli relations have deteriorated further, even further after the hard right government of Prime Minister Netanyahu took over. So give us a little glimpse of what has led up to this point and what led up to this attack.
The Israeli government has used American taxpayer dollars to murder Palestinian-American journalists in the last year, leave a beaten and gagged elderly Palestinian for dead, expanded illegal settlements, enabled wanton settler violence, which, by the way, targeted American Palestinians taking shelter, calling on the U.S. government for protection, which they did not get. We've also seen the desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque and the killings of hundreds of Palestinians, including many children, every year. We've also seen that Gaza, since Hamas was elected, I think in 2008, it's been an open-air prison where its borders have been closed and Israel controls access to water, electricity, and medical aid.
And as you know, that water and electricity and other emergency kind of supplies have been cut off now by Israel to Gaza. Do you have any inside contacts of how things are today in Gaza?
It's very hard in America to get a clear picture of what is happening. You know, we're relying on Palestinian Americans in contact with their relatives to let us know. But closing off the electricity to Gaza is part of a plan to silence voices in Gaza so that the world doesn't know what is going on. This violence needs to end, though. Indiscriminate violence, bombing of Palestinian civilians in Gaza, is only going to lead to a tragic loss of life and create new barriers for a lasting solution. Again, I think what's happening in Gaza is a dire situation, and that this is kind of a last solution, and it's a tragic and violent and deadly one. But here we are. Now we have to figure out how, as peacemakers, we can address the core roots and concerns of this violence to make sure that this never happens again.
You allude to other attacks that were carried out by Israeli forces on Palestinians, but this was clearly a Hamas attack on Israelis inside Israel. Does your group condemn the attack that happened on Saturday?
Again, every human life has value, whether it's Palestinian or Israeli. We condemn any violence against civilians. Somehow, though, the world has neglected to address the core concerns of the people of Gaza for 17 years. They would rather have peace with no solution. They would rather further the status quo. Even our own president has turned a blind eye to the two-state solution and just let Israel further its settlements without any solution in sight.
That's Robert Macau, Government Affairs Director of the Council on American Islamic Relations, who also chairs the advocacy branch of the U.S. Council of American Muslim Organizations. He was speaking to VOA's Carol Van Dam in Washington today. In opening the UNHCR's annual refugee conference, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees warned that aid fatigue is growing at a time when a record number of people are fleeing conflict, persecution, human rights violations, climate change, and grinding poverty. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, says the Hamas attacks against Israeli civilians and Israel's response in the past few days will cause more suffering for civilians on both sides and increase instability in the region. He describes the violence as another dangerous piece in a growing mosaic of crises. At the start of the UNHCR refugee conference Monday, he noted it is mainly conflict that has driven forced displacement to a record 110 million people, the highest in decades. As conflicts grow, he warns, so does disrespect for international humanitarian law. During a visit to Egypt, South Sudan, and Chad this summer, he says he met refugees fleeing the devastating conflict in Sudan who spoke of the destruction, death, torture, and rape they left behind.
They recounted how they had to run from the brutal violence that erupted without warning on the 15th of April. Their lives upended as suddenly as were those of the Ukrainians the year before and of many Ukrainians now facing every day the death and destruction resulting from the Russian invasion.
Grandi says these stories are those of all 110 million people around the world who have been forced from their homes by conflict, violence, and persecution. He says the global situation is dire and getting worse. Noting the UNHCR responded to 44 new emergencies in 31 countries over the past year. The latest emergency, he says, saw 100,000 refugees fleeing the Azerbaijan enclave of Nagorno-Karabakh for safety to Armenia. He notes violence continues in many places, such as in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where nearly 1.5 million people have been displaced this year alone.
Or in Central Sahel, where amidst growing political instability, violence perpetrated by armed groups is forcing more people to flee, including to coastal states. Or in Somalia, where the climate emergency coupled with conflict has forced nearly 900,000 people from their homes.
The High Commissioner says he's extremely worried that underfunding hampers UNHCR's operations. For example, he notes the $1 billion plan to help refugees from Sudan was just 25% funded. He adds this is only one of many humanitarian operations that are short of cash this year, and we're forced to make drastic cuts in food rations, protection needs, and other services. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Firefighters say heavy rain caused a landslide that has killed at least 23 people in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé. The incident occurred late Sunday in the district of Mambakolo, northwest of Yaoundé, which is home to nearly 3 million people. Images broadcast on TV show that an entire section of a hill collapsed and a levee holding back an artificial lake ruptured. A Kenyan court issued a temporary order barring the government from deploying hundreds of police personnel in Haiti in a UN mission to help the Caribbean nation tackle rampant gang violence. The order is valid until October 24th. An opposition political party, Third Way Alliance, and two Kenyan citizens filed the petition in court, arguing the decision to deploy the police officers outside the country is illegal. Last month, Kenya pledged to send 1,000 police officers after Haiti appealed for international help in its battle to end spiraling violence. The United Nations estimates 200,000 Haitians have been displaced by the violence, with armed gangs committing murders, kidnappings, gang rapes, and arson. The court petition said the deployment of the police officers is not only nonsensical and irrational, but unconstitutional. I talked earlier with Vanda Philbab Brown, a senior fellow in the Strobe Talbot Center for Security, Strategy and Technology in the Foreign Policy Program at Brookings, about what any international force would face in trying to ease Haiti's gang violence. Last February, she wrote a commentary titled Haiti in 2023, Political Abyss and Vicious Gangs. She points out that there are some 200 gangs in Haiti, about half in the capital Port-au-Prince. In part two of my conversation with Brown, she says an intervention, especially a temporary, limited one, would face enormous challenges.
The Kenyan deployment and other partner countries that will join it will be operating in highly densely populated neighborhoods with limited knowledge and intelligence. There are different estimates what kind of challenges they will face. One estimate, one set of analysts believe that the gangs will simply give up, that if they face superior firepower, and particularly if the mission comes with air assets, drones, the gangs will just go into hiding. They will not try to challenge the force. Any improvement in security is good, but the improvement will only last if the broader issues are addressed, as well as if the gangs are disempowered. So one problematic development would be that the Kenyan force comes in, the gangs go into hiding, the Kenyan force leaves in a year without having arrested or dismantled the gang memberships or without having retaken territories, and the gangs come back, perhaps even more powerful after the force leaves. This certainly is what happened with the previous UN force deployed to Haiti called MINUSTA. When the force left, and that force a decade ago at its peak numbered 18,000 personnel, when the force left, the gangs took over within about a year, and they have become far more brutal, far more powerful and organized during the period. So even if the Kenyan force does intimidate at first the gangs, if this is not followed with some policy of retaking territories controlled by the gangs, dismantling the gangs, arresting key gang leaders, the efforts might be very, the successes, the improvements might be very ephemeral.
So you think the Kenyans need more help, more other volunteers, other countries to volunteer and kind of beef up the intervention force?
Certainly, much larger contribution of personnel, wherever it comes from, would be very important. A stronger force would have greater capacity to meaningfully affect change and for that change to be maintained. Personnel is badly lacking, in my view, in the deployment, but it's not the only aspect of it. One very important element will be what kind of intelligence the Kenyan force will be able to get. The Kenyan officers deployed will not be speaking the same language. People in Haiti speak Creole. The Kenyan force will partner up with the Haitian National Police, but as we already said, the numbers are thin as well. Perhaps only 3,000 Haitian police officers are operational, and the force is infiltrated by the gangs. Often it critically lacks intelligence on the gangs. Some would even say that the gangs have better intelligence than the police does. So improving intelligence or having good intelligence will be a crucial element of the force ability to succeed or not. Will the force have air assets? If the force can have drones, that will be significant advantage in generating intelligence, but also in having authority and intimidation power. What kind of logistics, backup, medevac the force will be able to operate with are other crucial factors in how sustainable and effective it can be.
Vanda Filber-Brown is a senior fellow in the Strobe Talbott Center for Security, Strategy and Technology in the Foreign Policy Program at Brookings. She talked to me from Washington, D.C. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.